You have here a randomised comparison with a very impressive number of patients, 1,000 in each arm, of neurosurgical clipping as compared with endovascular coiling as a procedure for ruptured intracranial aneurysms. Now, clipping the patients inevitably means going in with a craniotomy, whereas the endovascular procedure is a femoral entry.
Correct. A clipping procedure involves a craniotomy to open the head, dissect through the sylvian fissure, usually into the brain, find the ruptured aneurysm and isolate it and put a clip across the neck. The endovascular procedure involves a transfemoral route with a catheter in the artery up into the neck and then a microcatheter placed intracranially into the intracranial vessels and then into the aneurysm itself, and then a series of tiny detachable platinum coils are placed and left behind within the aneurysm to seal it up from the inside.
Now, it's always exciting to try a minimally invasive procedure, but the hard question is, did it work?
Well, the short answer is yes. What we found was that there was a substantial reduction at 1 year in the death and disability. There was a 7.4% absolute reduction in death and disability at 1 year, and there was a 24% relative risk reduction at 1 year. So, and that was highly statistically significant with, given the very large number of patients that were recruited.
Now, I know you had interim results, and because of the interim results, the trial was terminated. There was some discussion at the time about all the entry criteria and whether the results were sufficiently sound. Now, some time on from the interim finding, what are your conclusions?
Well, the main concern of the endovascular coiling procedure was that this procedure might not prove durable, that the long-term benefit may not be there, because clipping has been around for 40, 50 years, and once the aneurysm's clipped, then the risks of rebleeding from that aneurysm are very low indeed. However, the anxiety was that coiling was an impermanent solution to the aneurysm and that these would come back. However, what we've had the opportunity to do is now follow these patients for up to 10 years, some of them. And we've now shown that the survival benefit continues up to 7 years. And we continue to follow the patient cohort.
And there's the question of epilepsy, isn't there?
Yes. Obviously, a craniotomy increases the risk of getting seizures after a craniotomy. And what we found was there was a 50% reduction in the risk of seizures in the patients who were allocated to endovascular treatment. So there was a substantial gain in relation to that endpoint.
Now, we're talking about a very dramatic event, a subarachnoid hemorrhage, and making quick decisions about the best treatment. What are your recommendations from this point on?
I think that patients who suffer a subarachnoid hemorrhage need to be transferred as soon as logistically possible to a neurosurgical unit where there is availability of both coiling and clipping, because coiling is not applicable to all patients with ruptured aneurysms. It's applicable to the majority of patients with ruptured aneurysms. Probably about 75% of patients are suitable for coiling. And if patients are suitable for coiling, then those patients are best managed by coiling as soon as practical after the subarachnoid hemorrhage.
Can you give me a ballpark figure for how many lives are saved per 1,000 patients treated?
In terms of the death and disability, 74 patients for every 1,000 treated are saved death and disability at 1 year.
Dr. Andrew Molyneux, thank you very much here at Oxford's Radcliffe Infirmary.